Chapter 46, Uddhava Visits Vrindavan. Shukadev Goswami said, "The supremely intelligent Uddhava was the best counselor of the Vrishni dynasty, a beloved friend of Lord Sri Krishna, and a direct disciple of Brihaspati. The Supreme Lord Hari, who relieves the distress of all who surrender to him, once took the hand of his fully devoted, dearmost friend Uddhava and addressed him as follows. Dear gentle Uddhava, go to Braja and give pleasure to our parents, and also relieve the gopis suffering in separation from me by giving them my message. The minds of those gopis are always absorbed in me, and their very lives are ever devoted to me. For my sake, they have abandoned everything related to their bodies, renouncing ordinary happiness in this life, as well as religious duties necessary for such happiness in the next life. I alone am their dearmost beloved, and indeed their very self. Therefore, I take it upon myself to sustain them in all circumstances. My dear Uddhava, for those women of Gokula, I am the most cherished object of love. Thus, when they remember me, who am so far away, they are overwhelmed by the anxiety of separation. Simply because I have promised to return to them, my fully devoted cowherd girlfriends struggle to maintain their lives somehow or other." Shukadev Goswami said, "Thus addressed, O King, Uddhava respectfully accepted his master's message, mounted his chariot, and set off for Nanda Gokula. The fortunate Uddhava reached Nanda Maharaj's pastures just as the sun was setting, and since the returning cows and other animals were raising dust with their hooves, his chariot passed unnoticed. Gokula resounded on all sides with the sounds of bulls in rut fighting with one another for fertile cows, with the mooing of cows burdened by their udders chasing after their calves, with the noise of milking and of the white calves jumping here and there, with the loud reverberation of flute playing, and with the singing of the all-auspicious deeds of Krishna and Balaram by the cowherd men and women, who made the village resplendent with their wonderfully ornamented attire. The cowherds' homes in Gokula appeared most charming with their abundant paraphernalia for worship of the sacrificial fire, the sun, unexpected guests, the cows, the Brahmins, the forefathers, and the demigods. On all sides lay the flowering forest, echoing with flocks of birds and swarms of bees, and beautified by its lakes crowded with swans, Karandava ducks, and bowers of lotuses. As soon as Uddhava arrived at Nanda Maharaja's home, Nanda came forward to meet him. The cowherd king embraced him in great happiness and worshipped him as non-different from Lord Vasudev. After Uddhava had eaten first-class food, been seated comfortably on a bed, and been relieved of his fatigue by a foot massage and other means, Nanda inquired from him as follows. "My dear most fortunate one, does the son of Shura fare well, now that he is free and has rejoined his children and other relatives? Fortunately, because of his own sins, the sinful Kamsa has been killed, along with all his brothers. He always hated the saintly and righteous Yadus. Does Krishna remember us? Does he remember his mother and his friends and well-wishers? Does he remember the cowherds and their village of Braja, of which he is the master? Does he remember the cows, Vrindavan Forest and Govardhan Hill? Will Govinda return even once to see his family? If he ever does, we may then glance upon his beautiful face with its beautiful eyes, nose, and smile. We were saved from the forest fire, the wind and rain, the bull and serpent demons, from all such insurmountable deadly dangers by that very great soul, Krishna. As we remember the wonderful deeds Krishna performed, his playful sidelong glances, his smiles and his words, O Uddhava, we forget all our material engagements. When we see the places where Mukunda enjoyed his sporting pastimes, the rivers, hills, and forests he decorated with his feet, our minds become totally absorbed in him. In my opinion, Krishna and Balaram must be two exalted demigods who have come to this planet to fulfill some great mission of the demigods. Such was foretold by Garga Rishi. After all, Krishna and Balaram killed Kamsa, who was as strong as 10,000 elephants, as well as the wrestlers Chanura and Mushtika, and the elephant Kuvalyapida. They killed them all sportingly, as easily as a lion disposes of small animals. With the ease of a royal elephant breaking a stick, Krishna broke a powerful giant bow 270 feet long. He also held a mountain aloft for 7 days with just one hand. Here in Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram easily destroyed demons like Pralamba, Dhenuka, Arishta, Trinavarta, and Baka, who had themselves defeated both demigods and other demons. Shukadev Goswami said, "Thus intensely remembering Krishna again and again, Nanda Maharaj, his mind completely attached to the Lord, felt extreme anxiety and fell silent, overcome by the strength of his love." As Mother Yashoda heard the descriptions of her son's activities, she poured out her tears and milk flowed from her breasts out of love. Uddhava then joyfully addressed Nanda Maharaj, having clearly seen the supreme loving attraction he and Yashoda felt for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. "O respectful Nanda, certainly you and Mother Yashoda are the most praiseworthy persons in the entire world, since you have developed such a loving attitude toward Lord Narayan, the spiritual master of all living beings. These two lords, Mukunda and Balaram, are each the seed and womb of the universe, the creator and his creative potency. They enter the hearts of living beings and control their conditioned awareness. They are the prime evil supreme. Anyone, even a person in an impure state, who absorbs his mind in him for just a moment at the time of death, burns up all traces of sinful reactions and immediately attains the supreme transcendental destination in a pure spiritual form as effulgent as the sun. You two have rendered exceptional loving service to him, Lord Narayan, the supersoul of all and the cause of all existence, the great soul who, although the original cause of everything, has a human-like form. What pious deeds could still be required of you? Infallible Krishna, the Lord of the devotees, will soon return to Braja to satisfy his parents. Having killed Kamsa, the enemy of all the Yadus, in the wrestling arena, Krishna will now surely fulfill his promise to you by coming back. O most fortunate ones, do not lament. You will see Krishna again very soon. He is present in the hearts of all living beings, just as fire lies dormant in wood. For him, no one is especially dear or despicable, superior or inferior, and yet he is not indifferent to anyone. He is free from all desire for respect, and yet gives respect to all others. He has no mother, no father, no wife, children, or other relatives. No one is related to him, and yet no one is a stranger to him. He has no material body and no birth. He has no work to do in this world that would oblige him to take birth in pure, impure, or mixed species of life. Yet, to enjoy his pastimes and deliver his saintly devotees, he manifests himself. Although beyond the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the transcendental Lord accepts association with them as his play. Thus the unborn Supreme Lord utilizes the material modes to create, maintain, and destroy. Just as a person who is whirling around perceives the ground to be turning, so one who is affected by false ego thinks himself the doer, when actually only his mind is acting. The Supreme Lord Hari is certainly not your son alone. Rather, being the Lord, he is the son, soul, father, and mother of everyone. Nothing can be said to exist independent of Lord Achyuta. Nothing heard or seen, nothing in the past, present, or future, nothing moving or unmoving, great or small. He indeed is everything, for he is the Supreme Soul. While Krishna's messenger continued speaking with Nanda, the night ended, O King. The women of the cowherd village rose from bed and, lighting lamps, worshipped their household deities. Then they began churning the yogurt into butter. As they pulled on the churning ropes with their bangled arms, the women of Braja shone with the splendor of their jewels, which reflected the lamp's light. Their hips, breasts, and necklaces moved about, and their faces, anointed with reddish kumkum, glowed radiantly with the luster of their earrings reflecting from their cheeks. As the ladies of Braja loudly sang the glories of lotus-eyed Krishna, their songs blended with the sound of their churning, ascended to the sky, and dissipated all inauspiciousness in every direction. When the godly sun had risen, the people of Braja noticed the golden chariot in front of Nanda Maharaja's doorway. "Who does this belong to?" they asked. "Perhaps Akrura has returned, he who fulfilled Kamsa's desire by taking lotus-eyed Krishna to Mathura." Is he going to use our flesh to offer funeral oblations for his master, who was so satisfied with his service? As the women were speaking in this way, Uddhava appeared, having finished his early morning duties. Chapter 47, The Song of the Bee. Shukadev Goswami said, "The young women of Braja became astonished upon seeing Lord Krishna's servant, who had long arms, whose eyes resembled a newly grown lotus, who wore a yellow garment and a lotus garland, and whose lotus-like face glowed with brightly polished earrings. Who is this handsome man?" the gopis asked. "Where has he come from, and whom does he serve? He's wearing Krishna's clothes and ornaments." Saying this, the gopis eagerly crowded around Uddhava, whose shelter was the lotus feet of Lord Uttama Shloka, Sri Krishna. Bowing their heads in humility, the gopis duly honored Uddhava with their shy, smiling glances and pleasing words. They took him to a quiet place, seated him comfortably, and began to question him, for they recognized him to be a messenger from Krishna, the master of the goddess of fortune. The gopi said, "We know that you are the personal servant of Krishna, the chief of the Yadus, and that you have come here on the order of your good master, who desires to give pleasure to his parents. We see nothing else he might consider worth remembering in these cow pastures of Braja. Indeed, the bonds of affection for one's family members are difficult to break, even for a sage. The friendship shown toward others, those who are not family members, is motivated by personal interest, and thus it is a pretense that lasts only until one's purpose is fulfilled. Such friendship is just like the interest men take in women or bees in flowers. Prostitutes abandon a penniless man, subjects an incompetent king, students their teacher once they have finished their education, and priests a man who has remunerated them for a sacrifice. Birds abandon a tree when its fruits are gone, guests a house after they have eaten, animals a forest that has burnt down, and a lover the woman he has enjoyed, even though she remains attached to him." Thus speaking, the gopis, whose words, bodies, and minds were fully dedicated to Lord Govinda, put aside all their regular work now that Krishna's messenger, Sri Uddhava, had arrived among them. Constantly remembering the activities their beloved Krishna had performed in his childhood and youth, they sang about them and cried without shame. One of the gopis, while meditating on her previous association with Krishna, saw a honeybee before her and imagined it to be a messenger sent by her beloved. Thus she spoke as follows. Gopya huvacho madhubakitava bandho maspashangrim sapatnya kuchabilulita mala kunkamash mashubhino Bahutu madhapatistan manini nam prasadam yodasadasivadam yam yasidutastamidri sakadadadasudam swamohinim pahyayitva sumanasa ivasanyas tatyajis manbhavadri padachatatikatam tat padapadmam upadma yapi batavitacheta yuttama shloka jalpai Kimya Bahashadangri Gayasi Tam Madunam Adipatna Magrahanam Magguto Nakpuranam Vijaya Sakasakinam Kiyatam Tat Pasanga Chapatakuchu Dasti Kalpayan Tishtamishta Abipata Madhupuriyam Mayaputra Nunasti Smadadi Sapitagehan Somya Banhum Shugopan Kachidapi Sakatanak Kinkari Nam Griniti Bujamogudu Sugandham Murnidasyat Kadanu Bujamogudu Sugandham Murnidasyat Kadanu The gopi said, "O honeybee, O friend of a cheater, don't touch my feet with your whiskers, which are smeared with the kumkum that rubbed onto Krishna's garland when it was crushed by the breasts of a rival lover. Let Krishna satisfy the women of Mathura. One who sends a messenger like you will certainly be ridiculed in the Yadu's assembly. After making us drink the enchanting nectar of his lips only once, Krishna suddenly abandoned us, just as you might quickly abandon some flowers. How is it, then, that goddess Padma willingly served his lotus feet? Alas, the answer must certainly be that her mind has been stolen away by his deceitful words. Oh, B, why do you sing here so much about the Lord of the Yadus in front of us homeless people? These topics are old news to us. Better you sing about that friend of Arjuna in front of his new girlfriends, the burning desire in whose breast he has now relieved. Those ladies will surely give you the charity you are begging. In heaven, on earth, or in the subterranean sphere, what women are unavailable to him? He simply arches his eyebrows and smiles with deceptive charm, and they all become his. The Supreme Goddess herself worships the dust of his feet, so what is our position in comparison? But at least those who are wretched can chant his name, Uttama Shloka. Keep your head off my feet. I know what you're doing. You expertly learned diplomacy from Mukunda, and now you come as his messenger with flattering words. But he abandoned those who for his sake alone gave up their children, husbands, and all other relations. He's simply ungrateful. Why should I make up with him now? Like a hunter, he coolly shot the king of the monkeys with arrows. Because he was conquered by a woman, he disfigured another woman who came to him with lusty desires. And even after consuming the gifts of Bali Maharaj, he bound him up with ropes as if he were a crow. So let us give up all friendship with this dark-complexioned boy, even if we can't give up talking about him. To hear about the pastimes that Krishna regularly performs is nectar for the ears. For those who relish just a single drop of that nectar, even once, their dedication to material duality is ruined. Many such persons have suddenly given up their wretched homes and families, and themselves becoming wretched, travel here to Vrindavan to wander about like birds, begging for their living. Faithfully taking his deceitful words as true, we are just like the black deer's foolish wives, who trust the cruel hunter's song. Thus we have repeatedly felt the sharp pain of lust caused by the touch of his nails. O messenger, please talk about something besides Krishna. O friend of my dear one, has my beloved sent you here again? I should honor you, friend, so please choose whatever boon you wish. But why have you come back here to take us to him, whose conjugal love is so difficult to give up? After all, gentle bee, his consort is the goddess Shri, and she is always with him, staying upon his chest. O Uddhava, it is indeed regrettable that Krishna resides in Mathura. Does he remember his father's household affairs and his friends, the cowherd boys? O great soul, does he ever talk about us, his maidservants? When will he lay on our heads his aguru-scented hand? Shukadev Goswami said, having heard this, Uddhava then tried to pacify the gopis, who were most eager to see Lord Krishna. He thus began relating to them the message of their beloved. Sri Uddhava said, certainly you gopis are all successful and are universally worshipped because you have dedicated your minds in this way to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. Devotional service unto Lord Krishna is attained by charity, strict vows, austerities, and fire sacrifices, by japa, study of Vedic texts, observance of regulative principles, and indeed by the performance of many other auspicious practices. By your great fortune, you have established an unexcelled standard of pure devotion for the Lord, Uttama Shloka, a standard even the sages can hardly attain. By your great fortune, you have left your sons, husbands, bodily comforts, relatives, and homes in favor of the supreme male, who is known as Krishna. You have rightfully claimed the privilege of unalloyed love for the transcendental Lord, O most glorious gopis. Indeed, by exhibiting your love for Krishna in separation from him, you have shown me great mercy. My good ladies, now please hear your beloved's message, which I, the confidential servant of my master, have come here to bring you. The Supreme Lord said, you are never actually separated from me, for I am the soul of all creation. Just as the elements of nature, ether, air, fire, water, and earth, are present in every created thing, so I am present within everyone's mind, life air, and senses, and also within the physical elements and the modes of material nature. By myself, I create, sustain, and withdraw myself within myself by the power of my personal energy, which comprises the material elements, the senses, and the modes of nature. Being composed of pure consciousness or knowledge, the soul is distinct from everything material and uninvolved in the entanglements of the modes of nature. We can perceive the soul through the three functions of material nature known as wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep. As a person just arisen from sleep may continue to meditate on a dream even though it is illusory, so by the agency of the mind, one meditates on the sense objects, which the senses can then obtain. Therefore, one should become fully alert and bring the mind under control. According to intelligent authorities, this is the ultimate conclusion of all the Vedas, as well as all practice of yoga, sankhya, renunciation, austerity, sense control, and truthfulness, just as the sea is the ultimate destination of all rivers. But the actual reason why I, the beloved object of your sight, have stayed far away from you is that I wanted to intensify your meditation upon me and thus draw your minds closer to me. When her lover is far away, a woman thinks of him more than when he is present before her. Because your minds are totally absorbed in me and free from all other engagement, you remember me always, and so you will very soon have me again in your presence. Although some gopis had to remain in the coward village and so could not join the rasa dance to sport with me at night in the forest, they were nonetheless fortunate. Indeed, they attained me by thinking of my potent pastimes. Shukadeva Goswami said, "The women of Braja were pleased to hear this message from their dearmost Krishna. His words having revived their memory, they addressed Uddhava as follows." The gopis said, "It is very good that Kamsa, the enemy and persecutor of the Yadus, has now been killed, along with his followers. And it is also very good that Lord Achyuta is living happily in the company of his well-wishing friends and relatives, whose every desire is now fulfilled. Gentle Uddhava, is the elder brother of Gada now bestowing upon the city women the pleasure that actually belongs to us? We suppose those ladies worshipped him with generous glances full of affectionate, shy smiles. Sri Krishna is expert in all kinds of conjugal affairs and is the darling of the city women. How can he not become entangled now that he's constantly adored by their enchanting words and gestures? O saintly one, does Govinda ever remember us during his conversations with the city women? Does he ever mention us village girls as he freely talks with them? Does he recall those nights in Vrindavan forest, lovely with lotus, jasmine, and the bright moon? As we glorified his charming pastimes, he enjoyed with us, his beloved girlfriends, in the circle of the rasa dance, which resounded with the music of ankle bells. Will that descendant of the Sharha return here and by the touch of his limbs bring back to life those who are now burning with the grief he himself has caused? Will he save us in that way, just as Lord Indra brings a forest back to life with his water-bearing clouds? But why should Krishna come here after winning a kingdom, killing his enemies, and marrying the daughters of kings? He's satisfied there, surrounded by all his friends and well-wishers. The great soul, Krishna, is the lord of the goddess of fortune, and he automatically achieves whatever he desires. How can we forest dwellers or any other women fulfill his purposes when he is already fulfilled within himself? Indeed, the greatest happiness is to renounce all desires, as even the prostitute Pingala has declared. Yet even though we know this, we cannot give up our hopes of attaining Krishna. Who can bear to give up intimate talks with Lord Uttama Shloka? Although he shows no interest in her, Goddess Sri never moves from her place on his chest. Dear Uddhava, when Krishna was here in the company of Sankarshan, he enjoyed all these rivers, hills, forests, cows, and flute sounds. All these remind us constantly of Nanda's son. Indeed, because we see Krishna's footprints, which are marked with divine symbols, we can never forget him. O Uddhava, how can we forget him when our hearts have been stolen away by the charming way he walks, his generous smile and playful glances, and his honey-like words? O Master of the Goddess of Fortune, O Master of Braja, O Destroyer of all suffering, Govinda, please lift your Gokula out of the ocean of distress in which it is submerged." Shukadeva Goswami continued, "Lord Krishna's messages having relieved their fever of separation, the gopis then worshipped Uddhava, recognizing him as non-different from their Lord, Krishna. Uddhava remained there for several months, dispelling the gopis' sorrow by chanting the topics of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Thus he brought joy to all the people of Gokula. All the days that Uddhava dwelled in Nanda's cowherd village seemed like a single moment to the residents of Braja, for Uddhava was always discussing Krishna. That servant of Lord Hari, seeing the rivers, forests, mountains, valleys, and flowering trees of Braja, enjoyed inspiring the inhabitants of Vrindavan by reminding them of Lord Krishna. Thus, seeing how the gopis were always disturbed because of their total absorption in Krishna, Uddhava was supremely pleased. Desiring to offer them all respect, he sang as follows. Etak param tanu beto bhavigo pavanvo govinda even kalapmani rudna bava vanchanti yanbava bhiyomana yovayancha kim brahma janma vidinam takatara sasya gve mastri yovanata divya bichari dushta krishne kachaisa padamatmani rudna bava Nan Vishro Nubajato Vidushopi Sakshat Jayastano Jagadaraj Hivopi Yukta Nayang Shiyong Unitanta the Te Prasara Svayoshitang Nalina Ganda the Chankutonya Rasotsavi Sabujadan the Gahita Kanda Randa Shishang Udagad Vajavalabhina Among all persons on earth, these cowherd women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. Their pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahman, or even as Lord Brahma himself? How amazing it is that these simple women who wander about the forest, seemingly spoiled by improper behavior, have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Krishna, the Supreme Soul. Still, it is true that the Supreme Lord himself awards his blessings even to an ignorant worshiper, just as the best medicine works even when taken by a person ignorant of its ingredients. When Lord Sri Krishna was dancing with the gopis in the Ras Lila, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This transcendental favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune or other consorts in the spiritual world. Indeed, never was such a thing even imagined by the most beautiful girls in the heavenly planets, whose bodily luster and aroma resemble the lotus flower. And what to speak of worldly women who are very beautiful according to material estimation? The gopis of Vrindavan have given up the association of their husbands, sons, and other family members, who are very difficult to give up, and they have forsaken the path of chastity to take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, Krishna, which one should search for by Vedic knowledge. Oh, let me be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers, or herbs in Vrindavan, because the gopis trample them and bless them with the dust of their lotus feet. The goddess of fortune herself, along with Lord Brahma and all the other demigods, who are masters of yogic perfection, can worship the lotus feet of Krishna only within their minds. But during the rasa dance, Lord Krishna placed his feet upon these gopis' breasts, and by embracing those feet, the gopis gave up all distress. I repeatedly offer my respects to the dust from the feet of the women of Nanda Maharaj's cowherd village. When these gopis loudly chant the glories of Sri Krishna, the vibration purifies the three worlds. Shukadeva Goswami said, Uddhava, the descendant of the Sharha, then took permission to leave from the gopis and from Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. He bade farewell to all the cowherd men and, about to depart, mounted his chariot. As Uddhava was about to leave, Nanda and the others approached him bearing various items of worship. With tears in their eyes, they addressed him as follows. May our mental functions always take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. May our words always chant his names. And may our bodies always bow down to him and serve him. Wherever we are made to wander about this world by the Supreme Lord's will, in accordance with the reactions to our fruit of work, may our good works and charity always grant us love for Lord Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O ruler of men, Parikshit, thus honored by the cowherd men with expressions of devotion for Lord Krishna, Uddhava went back to the city of Mathura, which was under Krishna's protection. After falling down to pay his homage, Uddhava described to Lord Krishna the immense devotion of the residents of Braja. Uddhava also described it to Vasudev, Lord Balaram, and King Ugrasen, and presented to them the gifts of tribute he had brought with him. Chapter 48, Krishna Pleases His Devotees. Shukadev Goswami said, "Next, after assimilating Uddhava's report, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the omniscient soul of all that be, desired to satisfy the serving girl Trivakra, who was troubled by lust. Thus he went to her house. Trivakra's home was opulently appointed with expensive furnishings and replete with sensual accoutrements meant to inspire sexual desire. There were banners, rows of strung pearls, canopies, fine beds and sitting places, and also fragrant incense, oil lamps, flower garlands, and aromatic sandalwood paste. When Trivakra saw Krishna arriving at her house, she at once rose from her seat in a flurry. Coming forward graciously with her girlfriends, she respectfully greeted Lord Achyuta by offering him an excellent seat and other articles of worship. Uddhava also received a seat of honor, since he was a saintly person, but he simply touched it and sat on the floor. Then Lord Krishna, imitating the manners of human society, quickly made himself comfortable on an opulent bed. Trivakra prepared herself by bathing, anointing her body, and dressing in fine garments, by putting on jewelry, garlands, and perfume, and also by chewing betel nut, drinking fragrant liquor, and so on. She then approached Lord Madhava with shy, playful smiles and coquettish glances. Calling forward his beloved, who was anxious and shy at the prospect of this new contact, the Lord pulled her by her bangled hands onto the bed. Thus he enjoyed with that beautiful girl, whose only trace of piety was her having offered ointment to the Lord. Simply by smelling the fragrance of Krishna's lotus feet, Trivakra cleansed away the burning lust Cupid had aroused in her breasts, chest, and eyes. With her two arms, she embraced between her breasts her lover, Sri Krishna, the personification of bliss, and thus she gave up her long-standing distress. Having thus gotten the hard-to-get Supreme Lord by the simple act of offering him body ointment, unfortunate Trivakra submitted to that Lord of Freedom the following request. "O beloved, please stay here with me for a few days more and enjoy. I cannot bear to give up your association, O lotus-eyed one." Promising her the fulfillment of this lusty desire, the considerate Lord Krishna, Lord of all beings, paid Trivakra his respects and then returned with Uddhava to his own supremely opulent residence. Lord Vishnu, the supreme lord of all lords, is ordinarily difficult to approach. One who has properly worshipped him and then chooses the benediction of mundane sense gratification is certainly of poor intelligence, for he is satisfied with an insignificant result. Then Lord Krishna, wanting to have some things done, went to Akura's house with Balaram and Uddhava. The Lord also desired to please Akura. Akura stood up in great joy when he saw them, his own relatives and the greatest of exalted personalities, coming from a distance. After embracing them and greeting them, Akura bowed down to Krishna and Balaram and was greeted by them in return. Then, when his guests had taken their seats, he worshipped them in accordance with scriptural rules. "O King," Akura bathed the feet of Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram and then poured the bath water on his head. He presented them with gifts of fine clothing, aromatic sandalwood paste, flower garlands, and excellent jewelry. After thus worshipping the two lords, he bowed his head to the floor. He then began to massage Lord Krishna's feet, placing them on his lap, and with his head bowed in humility, he addressed Krishna and Balaram as follows. Akura said, "It is our good fortune that you two lords have killed the evil Kamsa and his followers, thus delivering your dynasty from endless suffering and causing it to flourish. You both are the original Supreme Person, the cause of the universe and its very substance. Not the slightest subtle cause or manifest product of creation exists apart from you. O supreme absolute truth, with your personal energies, you create this universe and then enter into it. Thus one can perceive you in many different forms by hearing from authorities and by direct experience. Just as the primary elements, earth and so on, manifest themselves in abundant variety among all the species of mobile and immobile life, so you, the one independent supreme soul, appear to be manifold among the variegated objects of your creation. You create, destroy, and also maintain this universe with your personal energies, the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness. Yet you are never entangled by these modes or the activities they generate. Since you are the original source of all knowledge, what could ever cause you to be bound by illusion? Since it has never been demonstrated that you are covered by material bodily designations, it must be concluded that for you, there is neither birth in a literal sense nor any duality. Therefore, you never undergo bondage or liberation, and if you appear to, it is only because of your desire that we see you in that way, or simply because of our lack of discrimination. You originally enunciated the ancient religious path of the Vedas for the benefit of the whole universe. Whenever that path becomes obstructed by wicked persons following the path of atheism, you assume one of your incarnations, which are all in the transcendental mode of goodness. You are that very same supreme person, my Lord, and you have now appeared in the home of Vasudeva with your plenary portion. You have done this to relieve the earth's burden by killing hundreds of armies led by kings who are expansions of the demigods' enemies, and also to spread the fame of our dynasty. Today, O Lord, my home has become most fortunate because you have entered it. As the supreme truth, you embody the forefathers, ordinary creatures, human beings, and demigods, and the water that has washed your feet purifies the three worlds. Indeed, O transcendent one, you are the spiritual master of the universe. What learned person would approach anyone but you for shelter when you are the affectionate, grateful, and truthful well-wisher of your devotees? To those who worship you in sincere friendship, you reward everything they desire, even your own self, yet you never increase or diminish. It is by our great fortune, Janardan, that you are now visible to us, for even the masters of yoga and the foremost demigods can achieve this goal only with great difficulty. Please quickly cut the ropes of our illusory attachment for children, wife, wealth, influential friends, home, and body. All such attachment is simply the effect of your illusory material energy. Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus worshipped and fully glorified by his devotee, the Supreme Lord Hari smilingly addressed Akrura, completely charming him with his words. The Supreme Lord said, you are our spiritual master, paternal uncle, and praiseworthy friend, and we are like your sons, always dependent on your protection, sustenance, and compassion. Exalted souls like you are the true objects of service and the most worshipable authorities for those who desire the highest good in life. Demigods are generally concerned with their own interests, but saintly devotees never are. No one can deny that there are holy places with sacred rivers or that the demigods appear in deity forms made of earth and stone. But these purify the soul only after a long time, whereas saintly persons purify just by being seen. You are indeed the best of our friends, so please go to Hastinapur and, as the well-wisher of the Pandavas, find out how they are doing. We have heard that when their father passed away, the young Pandavas were brought with their anguished mother to the capital city by King Dhritarashtra, and that they are now living there. Indeed, weak-minded Dhritarashtra, the son of Ambika, has come under the control of his wicked sons, and therefore that blind king is not treating his brother's sons fairly. Go and see whether Dhritarashtra is acting properly or not. When we find out, we will make the necessary arrangements to help our dear friends. Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus fully instructing Akrura, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Hari, then returned to his residence, accompanied by Lord Sankarshan and Uddhava. Chapter 49, Akrura's Mission in Hastinapur. Shukadev Goswami said, Akrura went to Hastinapur, the city distinguished by the glory of the Paurava rulers. There he saw Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Vidura, and Kunti, along with Balika and his son Somadatta. He also saw Dronacharya, Kripacharya, Karna, Duryodhana, Ashwatthama, the Pandavas, and other close friends. After Akrura, the son of Gandini, had appropriately greeted all his relatives and friends, they asked him for news of their family members, and he in turn asked them about their welfare. He remained in Hastinapur for several months to scrutinize the conduct of the weak-willed king, who had bad sons and who was inclined to give in to the whims of mischievous advisors. Kunti and Vidura described to Akrura in detail the evil intentions of Dhritarashtra's sons, who could not tolerate the great qualities of Kunti's sons, such as their powerful influence, military skill, physical strength, bravery, and humility, or the intense affection the citizens had for them. Kunti and Vidura also told Akrura about how the sons of Dhritarashtra had tried to poison the Pandavas and carry out other such plots. Kunti Devi, taking advantage of her brother Akrura's visit, approached him confidentially. While remembering her birthplace, she spoke with tears in her eyes. O gentle one, do my parents, brothers, sisters, nephews, family, women, and girlhood friends still remember us? Does my nephew Krishna, the Supreme Personality and the compassionate shelter of his devotees, still remember his aunt's sons? And does lotus-eyed Rama remember them also? Now that I am suffering in the midst of my enemies like a doe in the midst of wolves, will Krishna come to console me and my fatherless sons with his words? Krishna, Krishna, O great yogi, O supreme soul and protector of the universe, O Govinda, please protect me who have surrendered unto you. I and my sons are being overwhelmed by trouble. For persons fearful of death and rebirth, I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet, for you are the supreme Lord. I offer my obeisances unto you, Krishna, the Supreme Pure, the Absolute Truth, and the Supersoul, the Lord of pure devotional service and the source of all knowledge. I have come to you for shelter. Shukadev Goswami said, thus meditating on her family members and also on Krishna, the Lord of the universe, your great-grandmother Kunti Devi began to cry in grief, O King. Both Akrura, who shared Queen Kunti's distress and happiness, and the illustrious Vidura consoled the queen by reminding her of the extraordinary way her sons had taken birth. The ardent affection King Dhritarashtra felt for his sons had made him act unjustly toward the Pandavas. Just before leaving, Akrura approached the king, who was seated among his friends and supporters, and related to him the message that his relatives, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, had sent out of friendship. Akrura said, O my dear son of Vichitravirya, O enhancer of the Kuru's glory, your brother Pandu having passed away, you have now assumed the royal throne. By religiously protecting the earth, delighting your subjects with your noble character, and treating all your relatives equally, you will surely achieve success and glory. If you act otherwise, however, people will condemn you in this world, and in the next life you will enter the darkness of hell. Remain equally disposed, therefore, toward Pandu's sons and your own. In this world, no one has any permanent relationship with anyone else, O King. We cannot stay forever even with our own body, what to speak of our wife, children, and the rest. Every creature is born alone and dies alone, and alone one experiences the just rewards of his good and evil deeds. In the guise of dear dependents, strangers steal the sinfully acquired wealth of a foolish man, just as the offspring of a fish drink up the water that sustains the fish. A fool indulges in sin to maintain his life, wealth, and children and other relatives, for he thinks, these things are mine. In the end, however, these very things all abandon him, leaving him frustrated. Abandoned by his so-called dependents, ignorant of the actual goal of life, indifferent to his real beauty, and having failed to fulfill his purposes, the foolish soul enters the blindness of hell, taking his sinful reactions with him. Therefore, O King, looking upon this world as a dream, a magician's illusion, or a flight of fancy. Please control your mind with intelligence and become equipoised and peaceful, my lord. Dhritarashtra said, O Master of Charity, I can never be satiated while hearing your auspicious words. Indeed, I am like a mortal who has obtained the nectar of the gods. Even so, gentle Akrura, because my unsteady heart is prejudiced by affection for my sons, these pleasing words of yours cannot remain fixed there, just as lightning cannot remain fixed in a cloud. Who can defy the injunctions of the Supreme Lord, who has now descended in the Yadu dynasty to diminish the earth's burden? I offer my obeisances to him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who creates this universe by the inconceivable activity of his material energy, and then distributes the various modes of nature by entering within the creation. From him, the meaning of whose pastimes is unfathomable, come both the entangling cycle of birth and death, and the process of deliverance from it. Shukadeva Goswami said, having thus apprised himself of the king's attitude, Akrura, the descendant of Yadu, took permission from his well-wishing relatives and friends and returned to the capital of the Yadavas. Akrura reported to Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna how Dhritarashtra was behaving toward the Pandavas. Thus, O descendant of the Kurus, he fulfilled the purpose for which he had been sent. Chapter 50, Krishna Establishes the City of Dwarka. Shukadeva Goswami said, when Kamsa was killed, O heroic descendant of Bharat, his two queens, Asti and Prapti, went to their father's house in great distress. The sorrowful queens told their father, King Jarasand of Magadha, all about how they had become widows. Hearing this odious news, Jarasand was filled with sorrow and anger, and he began the greatest possible endeavor to rid the earth of the Yadavas. With a force of 23 Akshauhini divisions, he laid siege to the Yadu capital, Mathura, on all sides. Although Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the original cause of this world, when he descended to the earth, he played the role of a human being. Thus, when he saw Jarasandha's assembled army surrounding his city like a great ocean overflowing its shores, and when he saw how this army was striking fear into his subjects, the Lord considered what his suitable response should be according to the time, place, and specific purpose of his current incarnation. The Lord thought, since it is such a burden on the earth, I will destroy Jarasandha's army, consisting of Akshauhinis of foot soldiers, horses, chariots, and elephants, which the king of Magadha has assembled from all subservient kings and brought together here. But Jarasandha himself should not be killed, since in the future he will certainly assemble another army. This is the purpose of my present incarnation, to relieve the earth of its burden, protect the pious, and kill the impious. I also assume other bodies to protect religion and to end irreligion whenever it flourishes in the course of time. Shukadeva Goswami continued, as Lord Govinda was thinking in this way, two chariots as effulgent as the sun suddenly descended from the sky. They were complete with drivers and equipment. The Lord's eternal divine weapons also appeared before him spontaneously. Seeing these, Sri Krishna, Lord of the senses, addressed Lord Sankarshan. My respected elder brother, see this danger which has beset your dependents, the Yadus, and see, dear master, how your personal chariot and favorite weapons have come before you. The purpose for which we have taken birth, my lord, is to secure the welfare of our devotees. Please now remove from the earth the burden of these 23 armies. After Lord Krishna had thus invited his brother, the two lords, wearing armor and displaying their resplendent weapons, drove out of the city in their chariots. Only a very small contingent of soldiers accompanied them. As Lord Krishna came out of the city with Dwarka at the reins of his chariot, he blew his conch shell, and the enemy soldiers' hearts began to tremble with fear. Jarasandh looked at the two of them and said, O Krishna, lowest of men, I do not wish to fight alone with you, since it would be a shame to fight with a mere boy. You fool who keep yourself hidden, O murderer of your relatives, go away. I will not fight with you. You, Rama, should gather your courage and fight with me, if you think you can do it. You may either give up your body when it is cut to pieces by my arrows, and thus attain to heaven, or else kill me. The Supreme Lord said, Real heroes do not simply boast, but rather show their prowess in action. We cannot take seriously the words of one who is full of anxiety and about to die. Shukadeva Goswami said, Just as the wind covers the sun with clouds or a fire with dust, the son of Jara marched toward the two descendants of Madhu and with his huge assemblage of armies surrounded them and their soldiers, chariots, flags, horses, and charioteers. The women stood in the watchtowers, palaces, and high gates of the city. When they could no longer see Krishna's and Balaram's chariots, identified by banners marked with the emblems of Garuda and a palm tree, they were struck with grief and fainted. Seeing his army tormented by the relentless and savage rain of arrows from the massive opposing forces gathered like clouds about him, Lord Hari twanged his excellent bow, Shanga, which both gods and demons worship. Lord Krishna took arrows from his quiver, fixed them on the bowstring, pulled back, and released endless torrents of sharp shafts, which struck the enemy's chariots, elephants, horses, and infantrymen. The Lord shooting his arrows resembled a blazing circle of fire. Elephants fell to the ground, their foreheads split open. Cavalry horses fell with severed necks. Chariots fell with their horses, flags, drivers, and masters all shattered. And foot soldiers collapsed with severed arms, thighs, and shoulders. On the battlefield, hundreds of rivers of blood flowed from the limbs of the humans, elephants, and horses who had been cut to pieces. In these rivers, arms resembled snakes, human heads, turtles, dead elephants, islands, and dead horses, crocodiles. Hands and thighs appeared like fish, human hair like water weeds, bows like waves, and various weapons like clumps of bushes. The rivers of blood teemed with all of these. Chariot wheels looked like terrifying whirlpools, and precious gems and ornaments resembled stones and gravel in the rushing red rivers, which aroused fear in the timid, joy in the wise. With the blows of his plow weapon, the immeasurably powerful Lord Balaram destroyed Magadhendra's military force. And though this force was as unfathomable and fearsome as an impassable ocean, for the two sons of Vasudev, the lords of the universe, the battle was hardly more than play. For him who orchestrates the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the three worlds, and who possesses unlimited spiritual qualities, it is hardly amazing that he subdues an opposing party. Still, when the Lord does so, imitating human behavior, sages glorify his acts. Jarasandh, with his chariot lost and all his soldiers dead, was left with only his breath. At that point, Lord Balaram forcibly seized the powerful warrior, just as one lion takes hold of another. With the divine noose of Varuna and other mortal ropes, Balaram began tying up Jarasandh, who had killed so many foes. But Lord Govinda still had a purpose to fulfill through Jarasandh, and thus he asked Balaram to stop. Jarasandh, whom fighters had highly honored, was ashamed after being released by the two lords of the universe, and thus he decided to undergo penances. But on the road, several kings convinced him with both spiritual wisdom and mundane arguments that he should give up his idea of self-abnegation. They told him, Your defeat by the Yadus was simply the unavoidable reaction of your past karma. All of his armies having been killed, and himself neglected by the personality of Godhead, King Jarasandh, son of Brihadratta, then sadly returned to the kingdom of Magadha. Lord Mukunda had crossed the ocean of his enemy's armies with his own military force completely intact. He received congratulations from the denizens of heaven, who showered him with flowers. The people of Mathura, relieved of their feverish anxiety and filled with joy, came out to meet him as professional bards, heralds, and panegyrists sang in praise of his victory. As the Lord entered his city, conch shells and kettle drums sounded, and many drums, horns, veenas, flutes, and madangas played in concert. The boulevards were sprinkled with water. There were banners everywhere. and the gateways were decorated for the celebration. The citizens were elated, and the city resounded with the chanting of Vedic hymns. As the women of the city affectionately looked at the Lord, their eyes wide open with love, they scattered flower garlands, yogurt, parched rice, and newly grown sprouts upon him. Lord Krishna then presented to the Yadu king all the wealth that had fallen on the battlefield, namely the countless ornaments of the dead warriors. 17 times the king of Magadha met defeat in this very way, and yet throughout these defeats he fought on with his Akshauhini divisions against the forces of the Yadu dynasty, who were protected by Sri Krishna. By the power of Lord Krishna, the Vrishnis would invariably annihilate all of Jarasandha's forces, and when all his soldiers had been killed, the king, released by his enemies, would again go away. Just as the 18th battle was about to take place, a barbarian warrior named Kaliyavana, sent by Narada, appeared on the battlefield. Arriving at Mathura, this Yavana laid siege to the city with 30 million barbarian soldiers. He had never found a human rival worth fighting, but he had heard that the Vrishnis were his equals. When Lord Krishna and Lord Sankarshan saw Kaliyavana, Krishna thought about the situation and said, "Ah, a great danger now threatens the Yadus from two sides. This Yavana is besieging us already, and the mighty king of Magadha will soon arrive here, if not today, then tomorrow or the next day. If powerful Jarasandha comes while we two are busy fighting Kaliyavana, Jarasandha may kill our relatives or else take them away to his capital. Therefore, we will immediately construct a fortress that no human force can penetrate. Let us settle our family members there and then kill the barbarian king." After thus discussing the matter with Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead had a fortress 12 yojanas in circumference built within the sea. Inside that fort, he had a city built containing all kinds of wonderful things. In the construction of that city could be seen the full scientific knowledge and architectural skill of Vishvakarma. There were wide avenues, commercial roads, and courtyards laid out on ample plots of land. There were splendid parks and also gardens stocked with trees and creepers from the heavenly planets. The gateway towers were topped with golden turrets touching the sky, and their upper levels were fashioned of crystal quartz. The gold-covered houses were adorned in front with golden pots and on top with jeweled roofs, and their floors were inlaid with precious emeralds. Beside the houses stood treasury buildings, warehouses, and stables for fine horses, all built of silver and brass. Each residence had a watchtower and also a temple for its household deity. Filled with citizens of all four social orders, the city was especially beautified by the palaces of Sri Krishna, the Lord of the Yadus. Lord Indra brought Sri Krishna the Sudharma Assembly Hall, standing within which a mortal man is not subject to the laws of mortality. Indra also gave the Parijata tree. Lord Varuna offered horses as swift as the mind, some of which were pure dark blue, others white. The treasurer of the demigods, Kuvera, gave his 8 mystic treasures, and the rulers of various planets each presented their own opulences. The Supreme Lord having come to the earth, these demigods now offered him whatever powers of control he had previously delegated to them for the exercise of their particular authority. After transporting all his subjects to the new city by the power of his mystic Yogamaya, Lord Krishna consulted with Lord Balaram, who had remained in Mathura to protect it. Then, wearing a garland of lotuses but bearing no weapons, Lord Krishna went out of Mathura by its main gate. Chapter 51, The Deliverance of Muchukunda. Shukadev Goswami said, "Kaliyavana saw the Lord come out from Mathura like the rising moon. The Lord was most beautiful to behold, with his dark blue complexion and yellow silk garment. Upon his chest he bore the mark of Shivats, and the Kaustubha gem adorned his neck. His four arms were sturdy and long. He displayed his ever-joyful lotus-like face, with eyes pink like lotuses, beautifully effulgent cheeks, a pristine smile, and glittering shark-shaped earrings." The barbarian thought, "This person must indeed be Vasudev, since he possesses the characteristics Narada mentioned. He is marked with Shivats, he has four arms, his eyes are like lotuses, he wears a garland of forest flowers, and he is extremely handsome. He cannot be anyone else. Since he goes on foot and unarmed, I will fight him without weapons. Resolving thus, Kaliyavana ran after the Lord, who turned his back and ran away. Kaliyavana hoped to catch Lord Krishna, though great mystic yogis cannot attain him. Appearing virtually within reach of Kaliyavana's hands at every moment, Lord Hari led the king of the Yavanas far away to a mountain cave. While chasing the Lord, the Yavana cast insults at him, saying, "You took birth in the Yadu dynasty. It's not proper for you to run away." But still, Kaliyavana could not reach Lord Krishna because his sinful reactions had not been cleansed away. Although insulted in this way, the Supreme Lord entered the mountain cave. Kaliyavana also entered, and there he saw another man lying asleep. "So, after leading me such a long distance, now he is lying here like some saint." Thus thinking the sleeping man to be Lord Krishna, the deluded fool kicked him with all his strength. The man awoke after a long sleep and slowly opened his eyes. Looking all about, he saw Kaliyavana standing beside him. The awakened man was angry and cast his glance at Kaliyavana, whose body burst into flames. In a single moment, Kaliyavana was burnt to ashes. King Parikshit said, "Who was that person, O Brahman? To which family did he belong, and what were his powers? Why did that destroyer of the barbarian lie down to sleep in the cave, and whose son was he?" Shukadeva Goswami said, "Muchukunda was the name of this great personality, who was born in the Ikshvaku dynasty as the son of Mandata. He was devoted to Brahminical culture and always true to his vow in battle. Begged by Indra and the other demigods to help protect them when they were terrorized by the demons, Muchukunda defended them for a long time. When the demigods obtained Kartikeya as their general, they told Muchukunda, 'O king, you may now give up your troublesome duty of guarding us. Abandoning an unopposed kingdom in the world of men, O valiant one, you neglected all your personal desires while engaged in protecting us. The children, queens, relatives, ministers, advisors, and subjects who were your contemporaries are now no longer alive. They have all been swept away by time. Inexhaustible time, stronger than the strong, is the supreme personality of Godhead himself. Like a herdsman moving his animals along, he moves mortal creatures as his pastime. All good fortune to you. Now please choose a benediction from us. Anything but liberation, since only the infallible Supreme Lord, Vishnu, can bestow that.' The king, exhausted by his labor, then chose sleep as his benediction. He further stated, 'O best of the demigods, may whoever disturbs my sleep be immediately burned to ashes.' The demigods replied, 'So be it,' and told him, 'That insensitive person who wakes you in the middle of your sleep will immediately turn to ashes simply by your seeing him.' Thus King Muchukunda took his respectful leave of the demigods and went to a cave, where he lay down to enjoy the sleep they had granted him. After the Yavana was burnt to ashes, the Supreme Lord Krishna revealed himself to the wise Muchukunda. As he gazed at the Lord, King Muchukunda saw that he was dark blue like a cloud, had four arms, and wore a yellow silk garment. On his chest he bore the Shivat's mark, and on his neck the brilliantly glowing Kaustubha gem. Adorned with a Vaijayanti garland, the Lord displayed his handsome, peaceful face, which attracts the eyes of all mankind with its shark-shaped earrings and affectionately smiling glance. The beauty of his youthful form was unexcelled, and he moved with the nobility of an angry lion. The highly intelligent king was overwhelmed by the Lord's effulgence, which showed him to be invincible. Expressing his uncertainty, Muchukunda hesitantly questioned Lord Krishna as follows: 'Who are you who have come to this mountain cave in the forest, having walked on the thorny ground with feet as soft as lotus petals? Perhaps you are the potency of all potent beings, or maybe you are the powerful god of fire, or the sun god, the moon god, the king of heaven, or the ruling demigod of some other planet. I think you are the supreme personality among the three chief gods, since you drive away the darkness of this cave as a lamp dispels darkness with its light. O best among men, if you like, please truly describe your birth, activities, and lineage to us, who are eager to hear. As for ourselves, O tiger among men, we belong to a family of fallen Kshatriyas, descendants of King Ikshvaku. My name is Muchukunda, my lord, and I am the son of Yovanashva. I was fatigued after remaining awake for a long time, and my senses were overwhelmed by sleep. Thus I slept comfortably here in this solitary place until, just now, someone woke me. The man who woke me was burned to ashes by the reaction of his sins. Just then I saw you, possessing a glorious appearance and the power to chastise your enemies. Your unbearably brilliant effulgence overwhelms our strength, and thus we cannot fix our gaze upon you. O Exalted One, you are to be honored by all embodied beings. Shukadev Goswami continued, thus addressed by the King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, origin of all creation, smiled and then replied to him in a voice as deep as the rumbling of clouds. My dear friend, I have taken thousands of births, lived thousands of lives, and accepted thousands of names. In fact, my births, activities, and names are limitless, and thus even I cannot count them. After many lifetimes, someone might count the dust particles on the earth, but no one can ever finish counting my qualities, activities, names, and births. O King, the greatest sages enumerate my births and activities, which take place throughout the three phases of time, but never do they reach the end of them. Nonetheless, O friend, I will tell you about my current birth, name, and activities. Kindly hear. Some time ago, Lord Brahma requested me to protect religious principles and destroy the demons who were burdening the earth. Thus, I descended in the Yadu dynasty, in the home of Anakadundubi. Indeed, because I am the son of Vasudev, people call me Vasudev. I have killed Kalanemi, reborn as Kamsa, as well as Pralamba and other enemies of the pious. And now, O King, this barbarian has been burnt to ashes by your piercing glance. Since in the past you repeatedly prayed to me, I have personally come to this cave to show you mercy, for I am affectionately inclined to my devotees. Now choose some benedictions from me, O saintly King. I will fulfill all your desires. One who has satisfied me need never again lament. Shukadev Goswami said, Muchukunda bowed down to the Lord when he heard this. Remembering the words of the sage Garga, he joyfully recognized Krishna to be the Supreme Lord Narayan. The king then addressed him as follows. Shri Muchukunda Huvacha Vimohito Yam Jana Ishamaya Chadiya Twang Nabajatyanatadri Sukhaya Dukkha Pabavesha Sanjati Krihesu Yoshi Purushas Chavanchitaha Lam Vajano Dur Labamatta Manusham Katam Charabhyam Gamayatnato Naga Bhadaravindam Nabajatya Sanmati Krahanda Kupe Patito Yatabashu Mamaisakalo Chitanispalo Gato Rajas Yonanda Madasya Bhupati Motyatma Buddhi Sutadara Koshabu Sasanja Manasya Dodanda Chindaya. Sri Muchukunda said, O Lord, the people of this world, both men and women, are bewildered by your illusory energy. Unaware of their real benefit, they do not worship you, but instead seek happiness by entangling themselves in family affairs, which are actually sources of misery. That person has an impure mind who, despite having somehow or other automatically obtained the rare and highly evolved human form of life, does not worship your lotus feet. Like an animal that has fallen into a blind well, such a person has fallen into the darkness of a material home. I have wasted all this time, O unconquerable one, becoming more and more intoxicated by my domain and opulence as an earthly king, misidentifying the mortal body as the self, becoming attached to children, wives, treasury, and land, I suffered endless anxiety. With deep arrogance, I took myself to be the body, which is a material object like a pot or a wall. Thinking myself a god among men, I traveled the earth surrounded by my charioteers, elephants, cavalry, foot soldiers, and generals, disregarding you in my deluding pride. A man obsessed with thoughts of what he thinks needs to be done, intensely greedy, and delighting in sense enjoyment, is suddenly confronted by you, who are ever alert. Like a hungry snake licking its fangs before a mouse, you appear before him as death. The body that at first rides high on fierce elephants or chariots adorned with gold and is known by the name King, is later, by your invincible power of time, called feces, worms, or ashes. Having conquered the entire circle of directions and being thus free of conflict, a man sits on a splendid throne, receiving praise from leaders who were once his equals. But when he enters the women's chambers, where sex pleasure is found, he is led about like a pet animal, O Lord. A king who desires even greater power than he already has strictly performs his duties, carefully practicing austerity and foregoing sense enjoyment. But he whose urges are so rampant, thinking I am independent and supreme, cannot attain happiness. When the material life of a wandering soul has ceased, O Achyuta, he may attain the association of your devotees. And when he associates with them, there awakens in him devotion unto you, who are the goal of the devotees and the Lord of all causes and their effects. My Lord, I think you have shown me mercy, since my attachment to my kingdom has spontaneously ceased. Such freedom is prayed for by saintly rulers of vast empires who desire to enter the forest for a life of solitude. O all-powerful one, I desire no boon other than service to your lotus feet, the boon most eagerly sought by those free of material desire. O Hari, what enlightened person who worships you, the giver of liberation, would choose a boon that causes his own bondage? Therefore, O Lord, having put aside all objects of material desire, which are bound to the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness, I am approaching you, the supreme personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are not covered by mundane designations. Rather, you are the supreme absolute truth, full in pure knowledge and transcendental to the material modes. For so long I have been pained by troubles in this world and have been burning with lamentation. My six enemies are never satiated, and I can find no peace. Therefore, O giver of shelter, O supreme soul, please protect me. O Lord, in the midst of danger, I have by good fortune approached your lotus feet, which are the truth and which thus make one fearless and free of sorrow. The Supreme Lord said, O Emperor, great ruler, your mind is pure and potent. Though I enticed you with benedictions, your mind was not overcome by material desires. Understand that I enticed you with benedictions just to prove that you would not be deceived. The intelligence of my unalloyed devotees is never diverted by material blessings. The minds of non-devotees who engage in such practices as pranayama are not fully cleansed of material desires. Thus, O King, material desires are again seen to arise in their minds. Wander this earth at will, with your mind fixed on me. May you always possess such unfailing devotion for me. Because you followed the principles of a kshatriya, you killed living beings while hunting and performing other duties. You must vanquish the sins thus incurred by carefully executing penances while remaining surrendered to me. O King, in your very next life you will become an excellent Brahman, the greatest well-wisher of all creatures, and certainly come to me alone. Chapter 52, Rukmini's Message to Lord Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami said, My dear King, thus graced by Lord Krishna, Muchukunda circumambulated him and bowed down to him. Then Muchukunda, the beloved descendant of Ikshvaku, exited through the mouth of the cave. Seeing that the size of all the human beings, animals, trees, and plants were severely reduced, and thus realizing that the age of Kali was at hand, Muchukunda left for the north. The sober king, beyond material association and free of doubt, was convinced of the value of austerity. Absorbing his mind in Lord Krishna, he came to Gandhamadana Mountain. There he arrived at Bhadarika Ashram, the abode of Lord Naranarayan, where, remaining tolerant of all dualities, he peacefully worshipped the Supreme Lord Hari by performing severe austerities. The Lord returned to Mathura, which was still surrounded by Yavanas. Then he destroyed the army of barbarians and began taking their valuables to Dwaraka. As the wealth was being carried by oxen and men under Lord Krishna's direction, Jarasandha appeared at the head of 23 armies. O King, seeing the fierce waves of the enemy's army, Krishna and Balaram, imitating human behavior, ran swiftly away. Abandoning the abundant riches, fearless but feigning fear, they went many yojanas on their lotus-like feet. When he saw them fleeing, powerful Jarasandha laughed loudly and then pursued them with charioteers and foot soldiers. He could not understand the exalted position of the two lords. Apparently exhausted after fleeing a long distance, the two lords climbed a high mountain named Travarsana, upon which Lord Indra showers incessant rain. Although he knew they were hiding on the mountain, Jarasandha could find no trace of them. Therefore, he placed firewood on all sides and set the mountain ablaze. The two lords then suddenly jumped from the burning mountain, which was 11 yojanas high, and fell to the ground. Unseen by their opponent or his followers, those two most exalted Yadus returned to their city of Dwaraka, which had the ocean as a protective moat. Jarasandha mistakenly thought that Balaram and Keshava had burned to death in the fire. Thus he withdrew his vast military force and returned to the Magadha kingdom. As ordered by Lord Brahma, Raivata, the opulent ruler of Anarta, gave Lord Balaram his daughter Raivati in marriage. This has already been discussed. O hero among the Kurus, the Supreme Lord himself, Govinda, married Bhishmika's daughter Vaidarbhi, who was a direct expansion of the goddess of fortune. The Lord did this by her desire, and in the process he beat down Shalva and other kings who took Shishupal's side. Indeed, as everyone watched, Sri Krishna took Rukmini just as Garuda boldly stole nectar from the demigods. King Parikshit said, "The Supreme Lord married Rukmini, the beautiful-faced daughter of Bhishmika, in the Rakshasa style, or so I have heard. My Lord, I wish to hear how the immeasurably powerful Lord Krishna took away his bride while defeating such kings as Magadha and Shalva. What experienced listener, O Brahman, could ever grow satiated while listening to the pious, charming, and ever-fresh topics of Lord Krishna, which cleanse away the world's contamination?" Sri Bhadarayani said, "There was a king named Bhishmika, the powerful ruler of Vidarbha. He had 5 sons and 1 daughter of lovely countenance. Rukmi was the firstborn son, followed by Rukmarata, Rukmabahu, Rukmakesh, and Rukmamali. Their sister was the exalted Rukmini. Hearing of the beauty, prowess, transcendental character, and opulence of Mukunda from visitors to the palace who sang his praises, Rukmini decided that he would be the perfect husband for her. Lord Krishna knew that Rukmini possessed intelligence, auspicious bodily markings, beauty, proper behavior, and all other good qualities. Concluding that she would be an ideal wife for him, he made up his mind to marry her. Because Rukmi envied the Lord, he forbade his family members to give his sister to Krishna, although they wanted to. Instead, Rukmi decided to give Rukmini to Shishupal. Dark-eyed Vaidarbhi was aware of this plan, and it deeply upset her. Analyzing the situation, she quickly sent a trustworthy Brahmin to Krishna. Upon reaching Dwaraka, the Brahmin was brought inside by the gatekeepers and saw the primeval personality of Godhead sitting on a golden throne. Seeing the Brahmin, Sri Krishna, Lord of the Brahmins, came down from his throne and seated him. Then the Lord worshipped him just as he himself is worshipped by the demigods. After the Brahmin had eaten and rested, Sri Krishna, the goal of saintly devotees, came forward and, while massaging the Brahmin's feet with his own hands, he patiently questioned him as follows. "O best of exalted Brahmins, are your religious practices, sanctioned by senior authorities, proceeding without great difficulty? Is your mind always fully satisfied? When a Brahmin is satisfied with whatever comes his way and does not fall away from his religious duties,
Those very religious principles become his desire cow, fulfilling all his wishes. An unsatisfied Brahmin wanders restlessly from one planet to another, even if he becomes king of heaven. But a satisfied Brahmin, though he may possess nothing, rests peacefully, all his limbs free of distress. I repeatedly bow my head in respect to those Brahmins who are satisfied with their lot. Saintly, prideless, and peaceful, they are the best well-wishers of all living beings. O Brahmin, is your king attending to your welfare? Indeed, that king in whose country the citizens are happy and protected is very dear to me. Whence have you come, crossing the impassable sea, and for what purpose? Explain all this to us if it is not a secret, and tell us what we may do for you. Thus questioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who incarnates to perform his pastimes, the Brahmin told him everything.
Shri Rukmini Vacha Shutn Vagunan Bhuvana Sundada Shinvatanti Nivishikana Viverai Hadatonga Tapam Rupam Drisham Drishimetam Akilata Labham Dvayochita Vishati Chittama Patrapam Me Katva Mukunda Mahati Kulashila Rupa Vindava Yoja Vinadama Biratma Tulyam Dhirapatim Kulavati Navanita Kanya Kali Nrsingha Nala Loka Manobiramam Dhanne Bhavan Kulubhatak Patadanga Jayam Atma Pitascha Bhavato Cha Vibho Videhi Ma Viram Bhagam Abhimarshita Chaija Arad Goma Yuvan Vigapate Balam Hambu Jaksha
Sri Rukmini said in her letter, as read by the Brahmin, O beauty of the worlds, having heard of your qualities, which enter the ears of those who hear and remove their bodily distress, and having also heard of your beauty, which fulfills all the visual desires of those who see, I have fixed my shameless mind upon you, O Krishna. O Mukunda, you are equal only to yourself in lineage, character, beauty, knowledge, youthfulness, wealth, and influence. O lion among men, you delight the minds of all mankind. What aristocratic, sober-minded, and marriageable girl of a good family would not choose you as her husband when the proper time has come? Therefore, my dear Lord, I have chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself to you. Please come swiftly, O Almighty One, and make me your wife. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, let Shishupal never touch the hero's portion like a jackal stealing the property of a lion. If I have sufficiently worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead by pious works, sacrifices, charity, rituals, and vows, and also by worshipping the demigods, Brahmins, and gurus, then may Gadagwaja come and take my hand, and not Dhammaghosha's son or anyone else. O unconquerable one, tomorrow when my marriage ceremony is about to begin, you should arrive unseen in Vidarbha and surround yourself with the leaders of your army. Then crush the forces of Chaitya and Magadendra and marry me in the Rakshasa style, winning me with your valor. Since I will be staying within the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I shall tell you a way. On the day before the marriage, there is a grand procession to honor the royal family's deity. And in this procession, the new bride goes outside the city to visit Goddess Girija. O lotus-eyed one, great souls like Lord Shiva hanker to bathe in the dust of your lotus feet and thereby destroy their ignorance. If I cannot obtain your mercy, I shall simply give up my vital force, which will have become weak from the severe penances I will perform. Then, after hundreds of lifetimes of endeavor, I may obtain your mercy. The Brahmin said, This is the confidential message I have brought with me, O Lord of the Yadus. Please consider what must be done in these circumstances and do it at once. Chapter 53 Krishna Kidnaps Rukmini. Shukadeva Goswami said, Thus hearing the confidential message of Princess Vaidarbhi, Lord Yadunandana took the Brahmin's hand and, smiling, spoke to him as follows. Just as Rukmini's mind is fixed on me, my mind is fixed on her. I can't even sleep at night. I know that Rukmi, out of envy, has forbidden our marriage. She has dedicated herself exclusively to me, and her beauty is flawless. I will bring her here after thrashing those worthless kings in battle, just as one brings a blazing flame out of firewood. Shukadev Goswami said, Lord Madhusudana also understood the exact lunar time for Rukmini's wedding. Thus he told his driver, Dwaraka, ready my chariot immediately. Dwaraka brought the Lord's chariot, yoked with the horses named Shaibya, Sugriva, Meghapushpa, and Balahaka. He then stood before Lord Krishna with joined palms. Lord Shauri mounted his chariot and had the Brahmin do likewise. Then the Lord's swift horses took them from the Anarta district to Vaidarbha in a single night. King Bhishmaka, the master of Kundina, having succumbed to the sway of affection for his son, was about to give his daughter to Shishupal. The king saw to all the required preparations. The king had the main avenues, commercial roads, and intersections thoroughly cleaned and then sprinkled with water. And he also had the city decorated with triumphant archways and multicolored banners on poles. The men and women of the city, arrayed in spotless raiment and anointed with fragrant sandalwood paste, wore precious necklaces, flower garlands, and jeweled ornaments, and their opulent homes were filled with the aroma of a guru. In accordance with prescribed rituals, Maharaj Bhishmaka worshipped the forefathers, demigods, and Brahmins, feeding them all properly. Then he had the traditional mantras chanted for the well-being of the bride. The bride cleaned her teeth and bathed, after which she put on the auspicious wedding necklace. Then she was dressed in brand new upper and lower garments and adorned with the most excellent jeweled ornaments. The best of Brahmins chanted mantras of the Rig, Sama, and Yajurvedas for the bride's protection. And the priest, learned in the Atharva Veda, offered oblations to pacify the controlling planets. Outstanding in his knowledge of regulative principles, the king rewarded the Brahmins with gold, silver, clothing, cows, and sesame seeds mixed with raw sugar. King Damagosh, lord of Chedi, had also engaged Brahmins expert in chanting mantras to perform all rituals necessary to assure his son's prosperity. King Damagosh traveled to Kundina accompanied by armies of elephants exuding mudda, chariots hung with golden chains, and numerous cavalry and infantry soldiers. Bhishmaka, the lord of Vidarbha, came out of the city and met King Damagosh, offering him tokens of respect. Bhishmaka then settled Damagosh in a residence especially constructed for the occasion. Shishupal's supporters, Shalva, Jarasand, Dantavakra, and Vidurata, all came, along with Poundraka and thousands of other kings. To secure the bride for Shishupal, the kings who envied Krishna and Balaram came to the following decision among themselves. If Krishna comes here with Balaram and the other Yadus to steal the bride, we shall band together and fight him. Thus those envious kings went to the wedding with their entire armies and a full complement of military conveyances. When Lord Balaram heard about these preparations of the inimical kings and how Lord Krishna had set off alone to steal the bride, he feared that a fight would ensue. Immersed in affection for his brother, he hurried to Kundina with a mighty army consisting of infantry and of soldiers riding on elephants, horses, and chariots. The lovely daughter of Bhishmaka anxiously awaited the arrival of Krishna, but when she did not see the Brahmin return, she thought as follows, Alas, my wedding is to take place when the night ends. How unlucky I am! Lotus-eyed Krishna does not come. I don't know why. And even the Brahmin messenger has not yet returned. Perhaps the faultless Lord, even while preparing to come here, saw something contemptible in me, and therefore has not come to take my hand. I am extremely unfortunate, for the Creator is not favorably disposed toward me, nor is the great Lord Shiva. Perhaps Lord Shiva's wife Devi, who is known as Gauri, Rudrani, Girija, and Sati, has turned against me. As she thought in this way, the young maiden, whose mind had been stolen by Krishna, closed her tear-filled eyes. remembering that there was still time. O king, as the bride thus awaited the arrival of Govinda, she felt a twitch in her left thigh, arm, and eye. This was a sign that something desirable would happen. Just then, that purest of learned Brahmins, following Krishna's order, came to see the divine princess Rukmini within the inner chambers of the palace. Noting the Brahmin's joyful face and serene movements, saintly Rukmini, who could expertly interpret such symptoms, inquired from him with a pure smile. The Brahmin announced to her the arrival of Lord Yadunandana and relayed the Lord's promise to marry her. Princess Vaidarbhi was overjoyed to learn of Krishna's arrival. Not finding anything at hand suitable to offer the Brahmin, she simply bowed down to him.